Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary, Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include counteracting AI, my interview with American Land Title Association's Elizabeth Blosser on non-title record agreements for personal service, or NTRAPS, and reaction to Friday's payrolls report. Thanks to Built Technologies for sponsoring today's podcast. Join Built Technologies on June 20th at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time for an exclusive webinar that will dive into proactive portfolio monitoring. During this event, gain valuable knowledge from Built's experts as they share best practices for achieving greater visibility into your construction portfolio. Unlock the secrets of successful portfolio management and learn how to leverage the power of data-driven decision-making. It isn't as if building or lending products or ways of doing business were handed down by Trappist monks. Change is always afoot, for better or worse. What is old is new again. Teachers are moving to oral exams to counteract AI and ChatGPT, similar to ancient Greek and Roman times. In the West and Southwest, adequate water rights and supplies have always been contentious, but have resurfaced. Get it? With news that may impact other cities and towns. Arizona began limiting approvals for new developments within the Phoenix area. I mean, it's hard to build large affordable housing developments or swaths of housing in general if there's no water, or roads, or sewage capacity. For fans of tiny homes, what is old is new again. And the Sears catalog kit houses, which were sold between 1908 and 1942 of old, are back at Home Depot. You can find the link at robchrisman.com. There's 837 square feet for $43,000, 540 square feet for $44,000, and 444 square feet for $32,000. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome onto the show American Land Title Association's Elizabeth Blosser to talk about non-title recorded agreements for personal service, or NTRAPS. She's the Vice President of Government Affairs for the American Land Title Association, and in this role, she oversees the association's state legislative efforts, including annually monitoring state bills related to the real estate, mortgage, and title industries. She's also engaged in a variety of industry initiatives, including digital closings and e-mortgages. She has extensive experience managing political, grassroots, and public relations campaigns.
I should probably admit, I was a little in the dark before doing some research on this interview today about non-title recorded agreements for personal service, or NTRAPS, and it's a predatory practice. Can you explain to the audience a little bit about what NTRAPS is and who it's affecting?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a sort of a big term there when you start talking about non-title recorded agreements for personal services, which is an accurate definition, but the description is better represented in the acronym of NTRAPS. And we've been very concerned about these unfair agreements that are entrapping consumers. So let me tell you a little bit about what's happening. It was just last summer, we learned that there were real estate brokerage firms that were offering consumers as little as $300 to sign real estate listing agreements for as long as 40 years. So it was certainly a significant period of time and much more than we typically see in the industry. These agreements were then being recorded in the land records in an attempt to create a lien. And the penalty for noncompliance or cancellation with these agreements, whether you're talking 5, 10, 15, or even 40 years down the road, is 3% of a person's property value. So significantly more than any upfront compensation that was received. In addition to, you know, purporting to bind the signers, these agreements are interesting in that they also purport to bind the signer's heirs. So, you know, if you think about it, if I were to sign one of these agreements, maybe a family member down the road would be the one who ended up ultimately selling my property, and they may have no knowledge that these agreements even exist, but would still, according to the agreement, be subject to it. So that's kind of what we've been seeing happening around the country. We were very concerned. We started seeing a lot of these pop up last year, and our members wanted to find a way to address them and protect consumers.
You feel like people are not reading the fine print, or they're being told something that isn't true. How do people end up signing these agreements? It sounds like, I mean, they're trapped, obviously, and not something that's in their best interest, yet it's still happening. What are the most common ways that people fall into it?
Well, I think there's two parts to the answer on that. One, five state attorneys general have filed complaints regarding these agreements, and it's worth taking a look at those complaints and the things that state attorneys general are alleging in terms of how these agreements may, you know, violate state consumer protection and unfair practices laws. But the other thing is, you know, you and I and your listeners are familiar with the real estate market and how these things work. We're real estate professionals. If you're not an attorney or a real estate professional, you know, these are complicated matters. And so I think that that also, you know, plays into this. And obviously, when you're talking about receiving compensation, you know, in the amount as little as $300, that's not going to allow you to go out and seek legal counsel.
And I think this is where you come in and Alta comes in. What's being done to protect homeowners or spread awareness about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, we found out about this last summer and wanted to take action right away. We were very fortunate to be able to partner with AARP, some of our real estate industry partners and national real estate law experts. And we drafted model legislation that makes these agreements unrecordable and unenforceable. And so that language was ready at the end of last year. And I'm very excited to say 21 states have introduced legislation that bans or limits these agreements. And bills have already passed in 11 states. And anybody who's worked on legislative efforts knows that that is a significant a victory for consumer protection to get that many bills passed so quickly. And it's really telling. The legislation is passing with overwhelming majorities, in many cases unanimously, through these state legislatures. So, you know, everybody sees the need to protect consumers. This is not a political or partisan issue in any way. It really is about true consumer protection. And then in addition to that, we have really applauded the work of state attorneys general who've taken a hard look at these agreements and how they might, you know, violate existing state laws.
21 down, 29 to go, or 11 down, 39 to go, however you want to look at it. I want to talk about your role specifically. So you are the Vice President of Government Affairs. What's your day-to-day looking like? What's your job description? What are you working on?
Well, I'm pretty fortunate in that I get to be involved with a lot of the initiatives of the title industry. So my primary focus, and especially at this time of the year, where we have a lot of state legislatures in session, is really focusing on what's happening in regards to state legislation. And so, you know, we track generally upwards of 12 to 1500 bills a year that impact the industry. So we're really busy with that at the beginning of the year. But I also have had the opportunity to be involved in a lot of the industry's strategic initiatives and priorities. For example, when I first started at Alta 6 years ago, I was able to work partnering with the Mortgage Bankers Association to draft the MBA Alta Model Act for the use of remote online notarization. So we partnered on a multi-year effort. We're now at 44 states on that effort that allow remote online notarization. And now, as an expansion of that, you know, we're working with MBA and others on how to promote adoption by identifying barriers to implementation and figuring out how as a joint industry, we can address those and move the e-mortgage and digital closing process forward.
That's a ridiculous amount of annual bill, and I'm sure you and I could speak for hours on it, and I would like to have you back on the podcast at some point soon. But for the sake of time, Are there any other legislative efforts currently underway that you think would be of interest to listeners?
Yeah, there's quite a few things happening. I would say our portfolio of issues has been expanding. It's probably tripled in the last 5 years. Under this umbrella of consumer protection, which has been a strategic initiative at Alta, you know, we've been working on issues related to heirs property. We've supported the Uniform Partition of Heirs Property Act. We've been working a lot on how to address historically discriminatory covenants in land records and empower people to address those. Under the umbrella of fraud, there's been a lot of work to do. We've been really focused on issues related to seller impersonation fraud, real estate wire transfer fraud, looking at, you know, if there's legislative help that can help, legislative measures that can help with those areas of fraud. And then you see a lot of other stuff happening, you know, sort of out of the blue this year. We saw 130 plus bills introduced that would restrict foreign ownership of land in particular states, you know, whether that be foreign entities or individuals. And so bills have passed in 15 states now, I believe. And so that is also a big issue that we have been looking at.
What are the best next steps for lenders or those looking to get involved, or information, or what are the best ways that they can assist in the effort?
Really connecting through your professional trade association, whether that be getting involved with ALTA or MBA or NAR or similar types of organizations. When we all speak with one voice, we're so much more effective. And we do a lot of partnerships on these types of legislative efforts with MBA and with NAR. And so really paying attention to alerts and information coming out from those organizations, getting involved with the committees that work on these types of issues. I mean, we're all, the more the merrier. I will tell you, at Alta, our committee that focuses on state legislative efforts has close to 150 members. And that is where the power comes in, is those people are educated, they're active, and they're working to, you know, accomplish objectives in their state that benefit not only the industry, but also our consumers.
And I want to close by asking you about Alta's Commercial Network, which is an annual conference that focuses on trends and policy regarding commercial real estate transactions. When is that? What types of people do you think it benefits most to attend? Give us a lowdown.
I'm so glad that you're asking about this. So I worked with some of our members to launch the Commercial Network a few years ago, and it has been a tremendous success. It's you know, our way of really helping our members who work primarily or exclusively in the commercial space to get the education, resources, tools, opportunities to network that they need. And I think in our industry, there can be a lot of focus on the residential side, which is good, but it's really nice to have an area where there's just sole focus on the commercial space. So we have an in-person meeting every year towards the beginning of the year, generally in February. We're working on finalizing our location for 2024, but I can promise it'll be someplace absolutely fabulous. And you know, we have a lot of sessions that focus on sort of what to anticipate in the market, what's coming next, but then a lot of practical sessions and roundtable discussions on how do you navigate difficult deals, what, you know, what steps can you take to sort of proactively address what you see coming down the pike in the marketplace. So it's a really fun meeting. People love it. We have a very faithful following at this point, and it just continues to grow every year. And everyone who's working in the commercial space is welcome to join us.
What's the best contact info or website for people to visit?
So the information will be available on the Alta website, alta.org. Under the events tab, you'll see Commercial Network, and you can look for updates there on meeting dates and locations for February.
Awesome. Elizabeth, I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For some good news, Eurozone inflation declined to a 15-month low of 6.1% in May, which could give the European Central Bank justification to pause its rate hike cycle. The ECB is still expected to raise rates another 25 basis points this month, but recent inflation data could open the door to pause later this summer. Like us. The stock market certainly closed out the holiday-shortened week on a strong note, with the Dow Jones average soaring 700 points for its biggest point gain of the year. Investors cheered the passage of a debt ceiling bill that averts a U.S. default. But the biggest driving factor was May's job report, which showed U.S. employers added a seasonally adjusted 339,000 jobs, far more than expected. The data also showed a moderation in year-over-year average hourly earnings growth and a bump up in the unemployment rate to 3.7% from 3.4%, which helped push recession and rate hike fears to the back burner, at least for now. U.S. Treasury yields rose, with the two-year note surging 18 basis points to 4.51% and the benchmark 10-year yield adding 8 basis points to 3.69%. The payrolls report renewed hope that a soft landing is possible, while the slowdown in earnings growth and the uptick in the unemployment rate were seen as clues that the Fed might be more inclined to pause or skip its rate hike campaign at the next Federal Open Market Committee meeting. Keep in mind that the Fed admittedly remains data-dependent, and May CPI, scheduled for release on the 13th, a couple days ahead of the FOMC rate decision, has the potential to impact FOMC policy decisions. This week's calendar is light ahead of next week's FOMC events. Today's calendar gets underway later this morning with S&P Global Services PMI, followed by ISM Non-Manufacturing PMI, April Factory Orders, the May Employment Trends Index, and the last scheduled Fed speaker ahead of the June 13th and 14th FOMC meeting, when Cleveland President Mester delivers remarks. We begin the five-day work week with agency MBS prices worse an eighth to a quarter from Friday, and the 10-year yielding 3.75 after closing last week at 3.69%. The 2 years up to 4.56%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. Here's food for thought, part 1 of 5. If a bottle of poison reaches its expiration date, is it more poisonous or is it no longer poisonous? Which letter is silent in the word scent, the S or the C? Do twins ever realize that one of them is unplanned? Every time you clean something, you just make something else dirty. And the word swims upside down is still swims. Thanks again to today's podcast sponsor, Built Technologies. Join Built Technologies on June 20th at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time for an exclusive webinar that will dive into proactive portfolio monitoring as Built's experts share best practices for achieving greater visibility into your construction portfolio.
If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.